This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley, and they are so happy to announce that the wine shop is now reopened Wednesday to Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the restaurant is open Thursday to Sunday for dine-in or takeout from noon to 7 p.m. So, wine shop, 11 to 5, Wednesday to Sunday. Restaurant, Thursday to Sunday, noon to 7. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. Year 13, I believe. We started in a studio in a barn on the Naramata Bench. Now coming to you from Nanook's Bay, Vancouver Island, and who knows where next year. The theme behind this week's show is New School, Old School. The New School story we're calling Block Party because it concerns a couple that I really like, and I hope you will as well, because we're going to go back to them on a regular basis to see how their experience in winemaking and farming is going. The vineyard is Birch Block, and they are in Culloden, just south of Penticton. They are Murray Bancroft and Sarah Bancroft. They have lives outside of farming. Murray is a food stylist, a food specialist, a chef, and Sarah is an editor, is brilliant at digital marketing, and between the two of them, very creative people. And I thought, these are the new winemakers in the Okanagan. Let's follow this story and see what happens. We do make reference to a documentary called The Biggest Little Farm, and it's a documentary that just won my heart and has really swept the documentary world with its story. Just about a couple out of Los Angeles who decided to buy a piece of land. It was pretty run down. It was really beaten up. It wasn't growing anything. And they brought it back to life. How they brought it back to life is the story. And that's what I wanted to do with Sarah and Murray. Follow this story, see how they do. They just spent a year and a half in Paris, downtown Paris. Now they're farming in Culloden. There's the arc of a story right there. And that's the conversation we're going to have. So that's New School winemaking. Old School winemaking, and they're not even that old. That story belongs to Valeria Tate and Ian Sutherland. Just one point about Valeria Tate and Ian Sutherland. I got two press releases from Tina Baird, goddess of the Naramata Bench. The first one said that Valerie Tate was leaving Bench 1775 after 8 or 9 years of being GM and winemaker, and was going to partner with her partner, Ian Sutherland, and make wines together called Two House. But not just make wines together. Each would make their own version of a Cab Franc, for example. They're going to release a Tempranillo. They're going to do some bubbly with a Chardonnay. They're going to do a Sem Sav. It's very small, but very small batch. So you're going to have to pay attention, focus on it if you want to get your hands on it. They mentioned a second label they're going to be working on called Charisma. And then the second press release came out saying that Valerie Tate was going to be the new winemaker and viticulturalist at Gold Hill, which is the huge growing property run by the Gill family in the Okanagan. They have many, many, many acres of vineyards. And Val is going to be working with Navi Gill. We're going to get to that story right at the end of the show. Valeria Tate, for the last 9 years, has been the GM and winemaker at Bench 1775 in the Okanagan Valley. And Ian Sutherland was, when I met him, he was, of course, the winemaker and the co-owner of Poplar Grove on the Naramata Bench. So two couples, Sarah and Murray Bancroft, Ian Sutherland, Val Tate, and how they make wines together. Here's the stories. Because we're going to come back to Murray and Sarah Bancroft, we're going to call the series Block Party, named after their winery, Birch Block Vineyards. This is a special. It's a feature special. We're going to try to gather the three of us. I'll explain who us is, are, in just a moment. And just follow the storyline along. But if you're going to spend that time inquiring about people's minds and their lifestyle and why they do things, you better find two interesting people. And I have, and Sarah and Murray Bancroft, who are the farmers and the originators, I can even call them the CEOs, of Birch Block Vineyard in Culloden in the Okanagan. Culloden's that town that you drive by when you're talking about if you're going to stop at Okanagan Falls for ice cream or continue on to Oliver. It's the town that almost none of you visit, but that's okay. That's okay. Because there are other there are other jewels down the valley. There's Oliver. There's Osoyoos. There's all of those wineries. I love Culloden, which is where the very first Pinot party that I attended was held. Was that the first one that you guys can remember?
I think it was for the first year or 2 years at Linden Garden.
In the park. The reason why I asked if we could all talk and join me here on Tasting Room Radio was because I had the opportunity. I was watching a story unfold in front of me, and I thought, why don't I capture that? Why don't I talk to these guys and see if we can slow them down long enough to actually talk and just explain how the journey has been and where they're headed, what their life will be like a couple of years from now. Because if I got my credits correct, Murray, you're still are an international culinary consultant?
Yeah, still consulting and food styling when I get the chance, especially when the vineyard isn't too demanding phase. But yeah.
Sarah, you're a little tougher because I know that you're an editor. You're in digital marketing, digital content. What else are you in that I haven't mentioned?
Well, that pretty much sums it up. I work with any number of different companies, helping them with their content marketing, I'm launching 3 websites this week, while in between, vineyard work. So never a dull moment around here.
And you're farmers, right?
Essentially.
Definitely. I'm the chief farming officer for sure. So
and the chief cook and bottle washer, right?
Well, you both cook, right?
We both do. I used to cook professionally. I guess I still do sometimes, but it is a big passion of mine. So I handle most of the cooking at home for myself and our daughters.
Okay. Murray just pulled a beautiful looking focaccia out of the oven, and he's about to put a massive lamb shoulder in.
You take great photographs. Your Pinterest and all those things that you post are absolutely fantastic. But when you're both in the shot, who's taking the photo?
We actually have our youngest daughter, who's 11, Charlotte, and she's pretty good with the camera these days. So it's usually her, to tell you the truth. And she can edit a video pretty well, too, quicker than we can.
Wow, I am so impressed. I'm so impressed.
The kids got to earn their keep somehow.
I know that you planted your Pinot. And then you went to Paris. It was a sabbatical of sorts, the whole of the family. When you decided to come back, were the kids, did anybody want to leave Paris? Did you want to stay there? Or did you like this journey that you had set yourself on?
I think all of the above. I mean, mixed emotions. It was an amazing year. We realized that we were incredibly lucky to be able to do it at the time we did it. The re-entry, I'd say, was probably tougher than the entry, for sure. Because it was just, I think there's more culture shock and kind of getting back into a different lifestyle. I came back and forth a few times for some work projects and to check up on the vineyard. But yeah, it was a bit tough coming back, but kids were, I would say, more excited to come back than not. And then we were excited to come back and get the vineyard project going, finishing some stuff here and get on with the new chapter. So, but it wasn't easy for sure.
Sarah, do you miss Paris?
Well, I have to say, I really felt at home in Paris. But that said, we treated it like a full-time job. I mean, we didn't sit around on the couch, that's for sure. So we felt like we made the most of the year, and we made lots of good friends, and now we have reasons to go back.
How was your French going in, and how was your French coming out, you guys?
We were just talking about that with a neighbor here in Culloden, because there's actually a lot of French-speaking people in Culloden and the surrounding area because of the workers that come from Quebec every year. A lot of the cellar hands are French. And some of the other winemakers are French from France, having grown up in winemaking families.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. Just a couple of bases that you touch that you guys like. You love food. You love wine. You love film. Yeah. You love the arts. Mm-hmm. You love your music. Do you agree on your music choices, Murray? For example, what do you want to put on and listen to when you're working?
I'm kind of all over the map. Like I listen to a lot of podcasts in the vineyard, mostly viticulture oriented and wine oriented. But I've actually been listening to Yo-Yo Ma lately.
relaxing and peaceful. Wow.
And Jacqueline Dupre as well. Okay. We kind of got into classical music again. But we have our French playlist. We have our Palm Springs playlist. Whatever we're in the mood for.
So, and I should have asked you this off the very top. How are you doing with the hunkering down, with the pandemic, with all that we are being asked to do and adhere to over these last couple of months? How are you dealing with it?
You know, it's been a process for sure. I think for a lot of, like for everybody, you know, it was very, very kind of bizarre and strange at first, and just trying to kind of tippy-toe day to day and make sure the girls are feeling good and all that sort of stuff. But we, slowly doing, there was lots to be done in the vineyard. So going out and getting sort of tasks done. Hour by hour, morning by morning, or day by day in the vineyard felt really, really good. We're quite fortunate up here to have some space to be able to do that and still get out and get some fresh air and exercise, and took it on to kind of challenge myself how far I could go without going and buying groceries. So been eating some pretty healthy food up here, and right now we've got wild asparagus kicking in and some different edible greens around the vineyard where we farm organically, so we don't spray anything. So we can pluck it right out of the vineyard, which has been great. So all in all, bizarre times, I think, and for everybody, but we feel pretty fortunate to be where we are right now, at least. So.
With a lot of families, the most common phrase around the house is, who stole my charger? luckily, you know, our kids are pretty tech savvy, and we've all had to pick up all kinds of different technologies. So it's been kind of good, actually. I was sort of surprised that our 10-year-old knows how to do editing on iMovie, and she can do screen captures.
This is astonishing.
She knows how to airdrop. I mean, it's great, actually. It's kind of, they've learned more useful skills, life skills, until they learn how to open up a bottle of wine.
Now have in-house tech support.
But how are they as farmers?
They're not very avid farmers, and so we're certainly not pushing it on them. We've given them a few real easy tasks, like collecting milk cartons that don't have to be around the vines anymore, a few little things. But if they show an interest, then I'll definitely work with them, but until then we're not really going to push it on them. So
when we first got here, Murray had just finished the winter pruning that happens in sort of March, early March, and we were actually supposed to be going to the Costa Brava in Spain and going wine touring there for spring break, which obviously didn't happen. So we'd cleared our schedules for a 2-week vacation, so we had lots of time on our hands to do the pruning ourselves for the first time, which was really interesting. And then the second thing that has to happen is picking up all the pruning, the sticks, as Charlotte likes to call them. So our younger daughter says, I am not picking up sticks and rocks, because literally that's what it felt like for about a week. All we did was picking up sticks and rocks. It's not as glamorous as you would think having a vineyard, people.
That's the behind the scenes of, you know, when you're not cheersing each other and smiling
and drinking rosé and the, on a
exactly.
blanket.
Exactly. Yeah. Listen, here's what we have in common. This is going to be at least a two-parter, so I'm going to take a break in a second. But we have something in common besides our love of wine and wine people. It's The Biggest Little Farm, the documentary that came out in 2018 that captured my heart. I know there were greater documentaries, more tragic, more life-affirming, but it really, really, really made a connection with me. Just about people who reinvented themselves. They were in Los Angeles. He was a cinematographer. And she, I think, was an editor, if I'm not mistaken. But they decided to, they bought this piece of property that nobody wanted. It was just, it had been burned right out and ill-gotten. And they realized that they needed help. They didn't know what they were doing. Or they needed to know what they had to do to bring this land back. And they found this soil and plant consultant, this guru named Alan York, who literally just took over the film and their lives. When we come back after this break, let's talk about maybe who your Alan York is and how you viewed that documentary when you saw it, especially when you saw it with your children as well, okay? By the way, I forgot to tell you exactly what this special is called. For the time being, it's called The Block Party. And we got that, we lifted that from Birch Block Vineyards, which is the name of their home farm. Murray and Sarah Bancroft are our guests, and we'll be right back with part two right after this. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. And they are so happy to announce that the wine shop is now reopened Wednesday to Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the restaurant is open Thursday to Sunday for dine-in or takeout from noon to 7 p.m. So wine shop, 11 to 5, Wednesday to Sunday. Restaurant, Thursday to Sunday, noon to 7. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. They are offering free shipping for locals. They are doing a drive-through winery tent in the parking lot, respectful of social distancing. You can find The Hatch Wines at 3225 Boucherie Road, West Kelowna. They're open every day from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Online, you can find them at Hatch Wines. Or you can check out all the details at thehatchwines.com. Murray Bancroft, Sarah Bancroft, they are the people behind Birch Block Vineyards in Caledon. They and their children, and Princeton, the dog, what breed is he?
GFP, German Shorthaired Pointer.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Is he liking being a farm dog?
He loves it in the vineyard, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he gets a little bit depressed if we take him back to Vancouver, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
So he likes facing the quail. He's a bird dog.
Okay. I meant to say Biggest Little Farm. When I realized that you'd seen that movie, then we had that in common. What was your view of the documentary?
Well, I thought it was very well done. I mean, I think I'm a very visual person too, so I thought it was fantastic that he'd taken some really great footage over a long period of time, some beautiful shots of kind of really put you on the farm, feeling like you were waking up there. And then subject matter, I mean, you know, it's always something that's been pretty close to me. I think whenever I've worked with food, it's usually been in sort of in the natural food, organics, all that sort of stuff. And I was really inspired when I was a young cook working at Le Crocodile with some tomatoes and produce that a guy was bringing in that he was growing organically in Abbotsford. And I actually wound up doing a side hustle where I was buying these ingredients from him and go out and spend time at his farm. And then boxing it up and sending it to people's houses, and that went on for a while until I couldn't do the kitchen and that, and sold it to Spud, the company that's kind of grown very well doing a lot of that. So it's always been important to me with the food side, and then the wine side, and the farming is kind of the new thing for me. But it was kind of reaffirmation, I think, of some of the things that we've gone through, and they did such a good job putting it together.
Yeah, and I think we could relate to it too, because when we found this piece of property, it was
the property that no one wanted to touch.
I mean, we kept looking at it on Google Earth and saying, why is there a vineyard next to it, an orchard beside it?
Yep.
Why is there this big empty 5-acre property with a view of the lakes and the mountains that no one has developed? Like, what's wrong with it? So it turned out that it was a llama farm that had gone into foreclosure. So we drove up in the dead of winter, tromped around in the snow, and we decided to make a bid on it. And Murray had to come with a sealed bid to the Penticton Courthouse, and there were four or five other parties there, all kind of young couples like us, ready to bet on a big risk. So our bid ended up getting accepted, and then we started the biggest job of all, which was the cleaning up of the property and dismantling animal buildings, cleaning up junk. It ended up being an incredibly huge project that we had never anticipated, but we're just starting to see it come to the other side of it now. Murray was just saying that was in the late 2016 that we took possession, and now here we are, spring of 2020. And we were walking the vineyard the other day, and Murray was sort of saying, you know what? It's just starting to look like a vineyard now.
And the thing about it is that it hadn't been farmed or mistreated, really. It could have been,
You know, it was, that was the most appealing for us. It was kind of virgin land. It hadn't been farmed. There was definitely some manure there, which was helpful. And then otherwise the soil samples that we took and the slope and orientation and aspect all seemed like a very good fit for Pinot Noir. And I kind of assembled a crew through our friend Sid Cross of everybody that we really respect that's doing Pinot Noir up here, and basically went around and sat down in person and interviewed and picked their brains, pretty much every single person. And that was kind of the start of the learning process.
You planted clones 115, 666, 7, and 777. You must have done your homework.
Yeah, a combination of talking with all those people, and eventually I started doing some courses with distance courses at UC Davis, but then really learned a lot as well from some friends in France. We met some people a year we were in Paris, and I've spent 2 years working with him. But like I said, a lot of the information came from the people that are doing a great job growing Pinot and making Pinot already in the Okanagan Valley.
Murray Bancroft, Sarah Bancroft. They are the people behind Birch Block Vineyards in Culloden. It was almost a year ago that you released, I think you launched your rosé. Am I correct?
That's right, yeah.
How'd you feel? Was it opening night?
Oh, it felt amazing, yeah. We were really happy with it. So with the younger vines, the idea was we'd always start with doing a Pinot Noir rosé. I actually went to school and when I was 20, 21, South of France, and lived there for another year and always loved those style of rosés from Provence, but also even the Sancerre Pinot Noir rosé, that style, really light, not very extracted, and just kind of delicious, some nice acidity. So that's always, we really knew a pretty strong idea of all the different wines we want to do over the years and the style, but that was going to be the first up. And we were really happy with it. While we were making it, a neighbor offered us one ton of Chardonnay grapes, and we said, well, yeah, I mean, that would be fun, and we don't have a lot, we're not going to make a lot of wine, so it might be nice to have a little bit extra. Tasted the grapes, they're delicious, and did the chemistry, it was delicious, so we did just 50 cases of the Chardonnay to go with our Pinot Noir for the first 2018, and we were really happy with the outcome of both, and then again, happy we just did the all Pinot Noir rosé for 2019 vintage.
I just saw the bottling, right? The bottling.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So it's all in the bottle now, and we're going to keep it in the bottle for a month before releasing it. And so both of those we call both vintages of the rosé. It's Birchbach Pinot Noir rosé. We call it Été sans fin, just because it's a little bit of French has always been important to both of us, and a bit of just the kind of playfulness of, I think, that rosé is about. It's not an intellectual wine. It's for spring, summer outdoors with friends and conversations and picnics and, you know, pool sides or boats or whatever, right. Responsibly, of course.
Responsibly on boats, yeah. Well, it means endless summer. And so it's kind of our philosophy too. And we also sort of have a philosophy of less is more. And I think that carries through to, you know, food, fashion, you know, we don't like stuff that's overly complicated, not approachable. So that philosophy kind of winemaking is in our packaging. It's in the way that we entertain. So we were happy. And it felt like having a baby. It really did. It felt like a baby shower. We had, you know, when you have people dropping by every 15 minutes.
So the first, you know, the year one sales went pretty quickly because we didn't have a lot, 140 cases, something like that. We literally had mostly just friends and family to our house, and they came and paid on Square and picked it up, and we poured a bit of wine for them, and I made a few little snacks, and it was really like having a really fun party, or almost
it was like a block party.
It was a block party. And then worked with some of our, you know, close friends and people that we've know and love in the restaurant business. And so we wound up doing all the Chardonnay with Wild Beast, and then working with Sebastian Le Goff for Cactus Club for the rosé.
The great Le Goff.
Yeah. So we've worked on different projects together in the past and become very good friends and see eye to eye on a whole lot of things, not just food and wine related, but culture in France and music and film and stuff. So right. that's been it's kind of, I think it's one of the best things about the wine business. It's kind of what I love about the food business. I mean, it's not necessarily the easiest or the most lucrative, but you do have great relationships with people. And to me, that's what it's all about. And then to be able to share it with our friends or see our friends sharing it with their friends or their families is kind of an amazing feeling too. It's similar to food.
Sarah, just one thing about that pop-up Chardonnay. When you actually get that fruit, then you have to just say, well, what Chardonnay are we making? Are we making a stainless steel unoaked? Are we going to put a little oak on the back end? Are we going to do maybe stainless steel on one side and oak on the other and then blend them together? How did it all come together?
I also think that Chardonnay is having a resurgence. I mean, I think it sort of got a bad rap in the
80s. It did.
When it was over-oaked Chardonnay. You know, our generation maybe remembers their mothers drinking it, but I think it is coming back. You know, we like to be a little bit ahead of the trends. And I think that our generation, certainly people who know a lot about wine, will always drink Chardonnay.
They won't drink bad Chardonnay. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's not all Montrachet all day, but we were happy with it. We're happy with it.
In the case of the Chardonnay, we just come back from Paris and I was drinking a lot of just like Chablis and that style of Chardonnay. So stainless steel, neutral oak, not getting any of the wood characters at all, and some nice acidity, bone dry. And so that's kind of what we were after from the beginning. So it made it fairly simple. And I kind of like a lot of those simple ways of winemaking too. So
Murray Bancroft, Sarah Bancroft, they are the people behind Birch Block Vineyards in Culloden. Now, Sarah, the guest house, did you give it a name?
Interestingly enough, we've been calling it the Vineyard Guest House, or the modern A-frame is what it's called on Airbnb.
Right.
So it's a 19, we think it's around 1968. So we had to gut the interior completely. It was pretty rough. And we've tried to make it a combination of sort of a cabin, but also it's got a lot of sort of influences from our travels. We have a lot of baskets and hats from Spain, and we've got big, huge metal platters from our trip to Morocco when we were living in France. Some of the linens and soft furnishings are from Morocco, or from the towels are all from Paris. So it's kind of a little international United Nations HQ that we have here.
By the way, are the gumboots still from Paris?
They are my Eagle gumboots.
Okay.
Sitting by the door.
Yep.
That was a gift for me. She got the good ones. I still have secondhand gumboots from the Penticton Valley Village, and they've got a big hole in the back. Super nice.
But to your point, saying that when you led off with talking about Culloden, it really is, like you said, it's sort of a sort of blink and you miss it drive by.
Right.
But it's actually started to become quite cosmopolitan. So it's changing. And it's really great to see people evolving and also just converting to organic as well.
There's a tradition of agriculture in Culloden. Like there's some beautiful, quite old vineyards here. There's some very old cherry orchards and peach orchards. And we're kind of surrounded by those as well.
But don't come to the beach. It's a terrible beach.
The guest house, is it open now?
We usually open up July 1st. I think that people are going to want to travel close to home. They're going to want to support BC companies. You know, being a guest house on a 5-acre vineyard with a view of the lake and the mountains and the wild horses and a wine fridge full of rosé isn't the worst way to spend a week this summer.
That is not a bad. I believe the view is of God's Mountain, is it not?
We look across to Skaha Bluff. And we can see Painted Rock and Blasted Church.
There you go. There. What's coming? I know that you bottled the pink. You give it a couple of bits to relax and rest. When does rosé become available? Or are you going to sell it lock, stock, and barrel to someone else?
No. So we're going to release it around June 1st.
We have a website right now, which is more of just a holding page. But we're going to be able to sell. We're going to have e-commerce on our new website so people can order wine. And we'll be offering free delivery for case lots. So that's sort of, I guess, our next big thing. And we've got four or five other projects that are kind of rolling out over the summer and into fall. So there's never really a dull moment around here.
It's kind of like saying goodbye, getting ready to shove those little bottles or babies to people to find new homes. But meanwhile, this year's vintage has really just started in the vineyard. So that's sort of exciting because we had bud burst a couple weeks ago and about to do some shoot thinning and suckering and just starting to take care of basically this year's growth is now happening and we'll be harvesting September, October for those guys. So
And those plants are another year older and deeper.
Exactly, deeper roots.
Hey, Sarah, I cut you off. What were you saying?
Got to plant some more this new acre that we've developed, and so sourcing the plant material for that. So I'm starting to sound like a real farmer. Plant
like
material.
A farmer. Now that you've done this once, what are you looking forward to as part of this? The bud breaks already happened. So now what?
One of the things I love most about the vineyard and working in the vineyard is the seasonality of it. You really go through that, things warming up and things really take off and start growing now. And then it goes, you know, through the different stages. You finally get flowering and then you get fruit set and then varies home. They start turning color and the very end. So I get excited about just things like the farmer's market up here in Penticton is very good. This year we'll have some on our farm as well. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, I mean, this summer more than others is still a little bit more unknown in terms of how much tourism will be in the valley, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But it does. And that's really going to change the vineyard work that we do here and what we're doing. So,
thank you, Murray. Hey, Sarah. Sarah, can we encourage people to get in touch if they want to come and visit, or are you not set up for visits?
Absolutely. We'd love to hear from you. Birchblockvineyard.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there, which will give you first access to our rosé release. Definitely, there's a button on our website that says view our vineyard guest house, and all the images are there, and you can book it right there.
I look forward to the home movies.
Yeah, I look forward to long summer days paddle boarding on Skaha Lake, and then
back to work in the vineyard.
Back to work in the vineyard.
Thank you for the first ever block party. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming, Terry.
Murray Bancroft, Sarah Bancroft, they are the people behind Birch Block Vineyards in Culloden. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. They are offering free shipping for locals. They are doing a drive-through winery tent in the parking lot, respectful of social distancing. You can find The Hatch Wines at 3225 Boucherie Road, West Kelowna. They're open every day from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Online, you can find them at Hatch Wines. Or you can check out all the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The suites are still open for business. Here's the latest news from Orofino. They will be open for sales this weekend, and hopefully, if all the paperwork shows up, they'll be open for tastings next weekend. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. My name is Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. Started, by the way, in a barn, in a studio in a barn, on the Naramata Bench some 13 years ago. And two of my best friends to ever meet up during those times, Val Tate, Ian Sutherland. And I saw a press release, guys. And we all saw a press release that you had finally, after all of this sort of walking around the subject, decided to make wines together, but not together. We'll explain. It's called Two House. Ian, you're not in the wine business anymore. You just drink, right?
Yeah, and I don't do enough of that.
But you have a cellar.
I do. I still have the cellar. And it looks like it's going to outlast me by quite a bit. So it's sort of my opus from my days of founding and running Poplar Grove. I took a bunch of cases home every year of everything we made, and
yes.
So still a lot.
Yes.
Yes.
And Val, you have spent, was it 8 years at Bench 1775?
It was, you know, more than eight, but less than 10. I think it was 9 years, actually. It would have, yeah, it was 9 years.
Sounds like a prison sentence.
Well, it does, but actually, you know, it went by so fast. It was like a blip. Although when I think back to the first year, it does seem like a long time ago, but it went fast. So
when you started, how much wine were they making? How many cases?
My first vintage was 925 cases.
And when you left, how many cases were they making?
26,000 cases.
It's ridiculous.
Woo! It was a roller coaster ride. Woo!
That's ridiculous.
I know. It is. It's like now that I'm saying those numbers out loud, it is ridiculous.
Wow. Now, I am just moving my lips, but basically I've always done that. You did dream of creating wines together at some point down the road, and we've come to that moment. What had to happen in order for this moment, Two Houses, to happen?
Well, I think, first of all, we had to have some wine. So for the past 3 years, we've been stealth winemaking, just small amounts, just a few barrels here and a few barrels there. We got some Tempranillo that's pretty much ready to release now, and some Bubble Base that will be released next year. So, you know, that was the first thing that had to happen. And then the next thing, I think, Val, was like, we had to want to.
Yeah, we had to want to work together. That's, you know, that can be touch and go sometimes. But, you know, the desire to work together rode out everything else. So here we are. And then also leaving Bench gave me the opportunity to have the time to do this project. So that was the one bittersweet, you know, decision of leaving Bench, was to be able to have more opportunity to hang out with Ian and, you know, make wine for ourselves.
Guys, I'm thinking that one of the key moments here, one of the key important pieces of information is, Ian, you did, when you had that original small vineyard, Poplar Grove, you were making wine for yourself. Val, you've been making wine for others with mm-hmm. all your heart and soul. How mm-hmm. how important is it for a winemaker to make wine for themselves and not someone else?
Well, I think it's something that becomes more and more important the older you are and the more wine you make. And definitely I reached that point where I felt very driven to be making wines for ourselves. And also I really wanted to hang out with Ian and do something that was like an intellectual exercise, really, you know, because we both enjoy drinking wine. We both love trying wines from around the world. And it was just like the next logical progression.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That was a big part of it, has been, you know, going and traveling together and visiting small wine holders and artisanal growers and winemakers in Argentina or wherever, and always being kind of thrilled and thinking, gee, you know, that's something we really like to get back to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So we had a lot of examples of people who had been doing it before us. And, you know, I just feel like it's a natural progression. We've evolved. We're at a higher level.
About the title, I'll just keep moving forward here. About the title, Two House. I like the fact that the two and the house are connected. There's no space mm-hmm. between them. I like that. That says something to me. The other thing is, you will never probably agree on what is a Cab Franc. Val, your Cab Franc and His Majesty's Cab Franc could be two separate things, but that's what you've decided to do.
Yes, that therein lies
the battle of the Francs.
Yeah, therein lies the potential for everything to go so wrong, but also, you know, potentially go right too. We may end up making, you know, the possibility is that Two House may have two Cab Francs in the portfolio. And in fact, that's probably going to be a pretty certain reality.
Okay.
That was so competitive.
What,
you know, Ian, and when we started this, she was all about, yeah, you make the reds, I'll make the whites. And that's quickly evolved into, I'm doing a cab for him too.
So the portfolio is not that wide. So it's Cab Franc and
Tempranillo. We have Tempranillo about to be. That will be our first release. It's from Golden Mile area, Black Sage, Golden Mile, on the west side of the valley. Beautiful little Gill vineyard that has been. I've been sourcing fruit from these guys for. Geez, and when I first started Poplar Grove, they were the first people who I turned to. They've helped me plant. They've been instrumental in growing some of the best fruit in British Columbia, bar none. So they've had this block of Tempranillo, and I took it a few years ago and made a few barrels of wine. So that'll be our first release.
Okay. And then we've got a bubbly. Blanc de Blanc. It's a Chardonnay-based bubbly. Again, the Gill family produced that fruit. And then this year we'll be doing a Sem Sauve blend and a Cabernet Franc.
Wow.
A Ooster wine Cab Franc. Yeah.
Wow.
But small lots, like 50 to 100 cases. So just like little tiny plays.
So basically two wines from two winemakers per vintage?
Basically.
That would be about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's the dream.
All right. Let me get my dream get in here for just a second, because the press release said Two House Wines will be available to people by invitation.
Yeah.
Ian, you want to tell me about the invitation part? How's that work?
You know, I'm not. That's where Two House kind of like goes south. I'm not so involved in the invitational part. I think people ask us, mostly friends, but also just acquaintances or people who have heard about it. The guy who replaced my knee, for example, and he wants to be on the list. So, you know, okay, you're invited. It's not that hard.
Okay.
But the point about the invitational, I think, it just speaks to the fact that there's, for example, the Tempranillo, our first release, will have 41 cases.
Oh, come on.
Well, that's all I made.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be that kind. When Val says it's a small play, small enterprise, she means it.
Damn.
But I think, you know, we'll probably have in the neighborhood of 50 cases of each, 50 to 100, somewhere in that.
So you're garagiste.
You know, Garage East is what I started as, and now I think it's more. There's an actual term.
We're it's hard to say. We're just like playing. We're playing. That's what we're doing.
I am so happy that you're playing and that you're making wine together. I truly am.
Oh, thanks,
GDM.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. You know, we're very excited to see where it goes and just be very exploratory and playful with it. And, you know, like literally it's making wines that we want to drink, that we want to enjoy.
Will you be working with what the Gill family grows?
Oh, definitely. They're going to be our growers.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay. Yeah. And they grow a lot. So could you expand? Are there certain plantings that you're keeping an eye on, thinking that would be really cool?
Well, they've got some new plantings going in where they've got Gamay and Pinot Noir. And me, you know, I really enjoy lighter red. So I'm definitely thinking about that, those blocks for sure.
And their home block of Cab Franc is so killer that I'll definitely be doing that. And, you know, I didn't know about the Tempranillo, but it's grown on me, and it's a beauty block. Way up high, it's got some altitude. It's the highest part of the vineyard. And, so I'll be doing that again. And the Cab Franc, those are probably my two.
All right, thank you, guys. Listen, that's the voice of Ian Sutherland, the founder of Poplar Grove, troublemaker, consistent troublemaker, and Valeria Tate, who for the last 9 years has been the general manager and winemaker at Bent 1775. They have finally decided to make wines together because they are a couple. And when I come back, I'll read another press release. I got one that said, told me about Two House, which is the winery that they're forming. But there's another one coming up about Val Tate and her new winemaking chores with Gold Hill, the Gill family, the growers in the Okanagan. We'll be right back with part two of our conversation with Val and Ian. Then Navi Gill from Gold Hill will join Val for the last part of the show. Have I confused you? This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The suites are still open for business. Here's the latest news from Orofino. They will be open for sales this weekend, and hopefully, if all the paperwork shows up, they'll be open for tastings next weekend. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Seating is limited, reservations are required, and good times are guaranteed. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13 from 11 to 4. Gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. You can find them at road13vineyards.com. And welcome back. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. You can find the details for this show at mulliganstew.ca. I was saying that I got a press release, a couple of press releases. The first one was from Tina Baird, who is the press maven on the Naramata bench, saying that Val Tate would like to announce that she will be working with her life partner, Ian Sutherland, winemaker and founder of Poplar Grove, and they are pleased to announce their new venture, Two House, a project they have imagined for several years that will bring together their passions for winemaking, the simple joys of the vineyard and cellar, and creating beautiful bottles of wine. Here's part two of the conversation with Ian and Val. All right, a question for Ian quickly.
Yeah.
You've been away from Poplar Grove how long now?
Ooh, 2012 was my last hands-on vintage.
Okay, so how much has the valley changed in those 8-9 years?
It's enormous. I mean, it just driving down Naramata Road where we live, it's gone from, you know, 20 wineries in 15 kilometers to 50. So it's, you know, it's more than doubled in that 8 years. And similarly, it's hard to find, it's really hard to find on the Naramata bench, at least, a fruit orchard. It's all vineyard, pretty much. Down in Oliver, not so much. There's a lot of very serious vineyard grower, wine growers, vineyardists, and there's also fruit. So it's a more of a balance. The changes, though, are spectacular.
Yes. Val? Are you concerned about the valley?
You know, I'm concerned about the valley in that, yeah, you know, we're in such an unpredictable time right now. I've been wrestling with this because sometimes in the beginning I was completely freaked out. And now I feel like, you know what, things are going to be okay. It's just that we're going to have to figure out how to do things in a different way. And maybe that's going to lead to a much better experience for people. Like, you know, the tasting room model, I think, was a struggle for a lot of wineries to really get behind. And so now I think we're going to be looking at more scheduled appointments, more, you know, greeting people in small, like, you know, 2 or 4 people at a time. And yeah, you know, and it'll be, you know, like, so people will be coming, but it'll be more one-on-one, like, you know, more curated and more experiential than it was before, with people cramming into a tasting room. And I think it's going to be a better experience for everybody.
Some of us like the cramming.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
that'll still be available.
That'll be available and it'll come back. We're just temporarily, you know, we're just with a temporary situation.
I tell you what, TDM, it won't be available at Two House.
There'll be no tour buses.
No tour buses for Two House. Yeah. But you know what?
Yep.
It'll come back. It's going to come back.
I did a special on the restaurants, of course, and how they're handling all of this. Yeah. And someone said, you know, there's going to be at least 30% of these restaurants won't be around. They're done. How about the wineries? Ooh. How about the wineries?
Well, I think that that's, yeah, you know, it's hard to say. There's been an opportunity for wineries to sell e-commerce or sell online, but there's a lot of small new wineries that just cannot connect to those consumers. There's demand. Wine consumption's gone up like crazy, but it's just, how does those wineries connect with that consumer who wants the wine? So that's the new challenge, you know, but the wine drinking is not going away and people are supporting BC more than ever. So how do we connect them? That's the challenge. You don't get the wines in their hands.
Okay, a couple of things I'll let you go. One is, when do you open?
Open? Oh. We're virtual.
When do we release?
Where's the start line?
Maybe we're going to release this summer when the wine's ready. Okay. We're tasting it frequently. And stay tuned. You know, we're going to post on social media. And then as soon as the wine is ready to drink and ready to consume, we'll release it.
You know, perhaps you could hire an outside taster. Someone who you could slip bottles to, who never mind.
Well, if we could ever get you off the coast and back to Naramata.
No, I'm sorry. We're no. Coastal. I'm sorry. It's...
All right, then we'll come to you.
Okay.
We've got a fishing boat. You've got a fishing hole.
What? Who wants to tell me about the possible price points on your wines?
That's a good question. We haven't figured that out yet.
Okay. How about a ballpark?
You know, $50 for the Tempranillo, I would guess, somewhere in that neighborhood. And Cab Franc, pretty similar.
The Bubble?
I don't know, Val.
Same. Yeah, 50. It's a lot of work to make the Bubble. And it's going to be 4 years old before it's released. So probably around the same price point.
Okay. Okay, fine. I haven't seen the label yet. What's it look like?
Oh, the label's spectacular.
We have such a story to tell with the label. Yeah, it's going to be a big, we're going to tease it out on social media because there's quite a bit of a story with the label and it's going to go with the two house, you know, like, yeah, you'll see. We'll send you little snippets.
Thank you so much. And what about the, what about the food program? When will the restaurant open?
What are you talking about?
We're gonna have people around our dinner table, like, you know, okay. Fans. Yeah, that'll be when we're ready to entertain. When the world opens up again, we'll have you at our dinner
that
table.
That for sure is by invitation.
And how well did you hunker down over these last weeks, months?
Totally.
We have a house in Panama that I go to and Val comes to when the ice wine was finished. And this year she couldn't get there because Panama closed the borders and the Canadian government recalled the Canadian citizens. So I came home and the two of us, I went directly from the airport to home and never left the building for 5 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the same with me. I was home for 6 weeks.
Our friends were bringing us little care packages of popcorn and chips.
Oh, man. It's so good to talk to you again. And I'm absolutely thrilled. I read like 3 lines of the press release. I said, this is fantastic.
You finally get
a chance. Wow.
Yeah.
We'll catch up again soon.
Come and visit Josie. Thank you.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, we will do that.
Two of the best winemakers in the Okanagan, Valeria Tate, Ian Sutherland, who are a couple, but getting together to make wines together under the label Two House, with a second label called Charisma. Thank you, Val. Thank you, Ian. Now, the second press release, also from Tina Baird, said, Gold Hill Winery owners and brothers Gerbakken and Sant Gill are excited to announce that Val Tate, co-owner of Two House Winery, will be joining their team as winemaker and viticulturalist. That's what she does. That's what they're growers. She's an amazing winemaker. It's just a great coming together. I mean, if you're a winemaker, you want to get your hands on the Gill family fruit. That's where the gold is right there. That's why they call it Gold Hill. Val will be working in partnership with Navi Gill, Gerbakken's son. They're a great pair because Navi is growing the fruit and Val's creating wines with it. So here's a conversation with Navi Gill and Val Tate. Navi, yeah. How long have your family's been in the Okanagan, what, 40 years growing?
Yeah, almost 40 years now.
And how old are you now?
I am 28. I'm turning 28 this August.
Okay. Was the last thing you wanted to do to be in the wine growing business?
No, I did not know I was going to be involved in this business. It was a different time for my family. At that time, we were converting our vineyards, our orchards over to vineyards, and I happened to be the eldest kid at the house at that time. when we were opening up the winery, and my dad really needed help. You know, he's an immigrant. There's a language barrier, doing paperwork and all that. And it just started from that, him asking me to help him out. And I just slowly got involved, and I started, developing a passion for the wine industry and the wine culture, really just got sucked in that way. And just really, really enjoyed my time.
And now, do you think it was a good choice? How do you feel now?
I love it. It's still very, very fascinating to me. And I've seen the growth from 2008 to now, and it's changed quite a bit. And during that time, our wine industry was growing quite a bit, especially on the international stage. We started marketing ourselves a lot, and it was just a really good time for myself to be involved at that time and really get in the industry at that time. Fortunate.
Hey, Navi, there's one thing. There's two things, and that is you realize that you could be the greatest growers in the world, but if you didn't know how to make wine, if you didn't know how to make make that fruit come alive, it was of no end. And you needed someone like Val Tate to teach you how to take that fruit and make it great wine, right?
Yes. I agree 100%. We don't come from a background of with wine. From my parents from Punjab, from India. When the British was colonizing India, it was all about whiskey, Johnny Walkers and all that, scotches. So it was never about wine. It was always about scotch and all these high-end whiskeys. But wine was a whole new thing for my family. And, we were very, very lucky to have met Val when we started converting our orchards. And we kept a good relationship since then.
Now, and here's the thing. This will be a learning experience for you, Navi. Hopefully, if you and Val create this partnership, she will teach you how to make those wines.
Yes.
That's the bonus.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
So, Val, tell me what's special about the Gill family vineyards.
Oh, well, first, the Gill family, super lovely, really genuine, very honest, like backbone, perfect family that you want to have in Canada. And secondly, as growers, they grow what I think is the best fruit in Canada, full stop. And many of their blocks have produced, the highest awarded wines in Canada, not just for wineries or wines that I've been involved with, but wineries that other winemakers have been able to make wine at. So they have a long history of producing fruit that's led to award-winning wines. And so for me, this is unbelievable to be able to come back and just have the pick of the litter, really. I don't know if that's probably an appropriate thing to say because there's other wineries buying fruit, but definitely to be able to have that luxury of getting the best fruit to make the best wine here.
So here's the thing. You've been working with the Gill family fruit for quite some time, and you actually helped plant some of those vineyards. So that for you, that's just a bonus. You're able to work with fruit that you planted and that you know how it was grown.
Yeah, know the blocks intimately. And, like I was saying about the family, Gurbachan and Sant, the two brothers, Gurbachan and Sant Gill, are fabulous growers. And they've just been, always innovating and always adapting techniques in the vineyard. So they're just fantastic to work with. very cooperative. And, you know, now being wine producers, they're also seeing the connection between what's produced in the vineyard and how it ends up in the bottle. And, you know, like you were saying earlier about Navi learning, I really feel like I hope I can be a mentor and really pass on to Navi, you know, like a lot of the knowledge that I've gained and experience that I have. So I'm looking forward to that relationship. It's going to be very fun for me.
And what's going to come off those fields? What are you going to start to bottle?
Well, the focus, it's a very tight portfolio at Gold Hill, and we want to keep the portfolio really tight. So the main focus is going to be Cab Franc and Sauvignon Blanc, because it's a white that I really love, and the fruit actually for all the Sauv Blanc I've ever made and Cab Franc has come from these vineyards. So it's just returning home. And then we have a few additional wines like Syrah and a little bit of Merlot and Malbec, but the portfolio is going to be very tight. Terry, there's a second label called Charisma, which we do a blended white, a blended red, and Cabernet Merlot.
Thank you for that. One more thing. I just saw this. You may have seen the story in the Globe and Mail about the possible flagship carrier for Canadian wine, Pinot Noir. And you didn't mention Pinot Noir. Is it too hot down there?
Well, the majority of the vineyards that have been planted are in Osoyoos, but they've secured this beautiful piece of property that's at very high altitude. It's one of the highest vineyards in the Okanagan Valley, and that's in Peachland. And they also have another site in West Kelowna, which is going to be planted to Pinot Noir. And in fact, the first crop is coming off of the Peachland property. So that will eventually find its way in the portfolio, I'm sure, but probably in small select lots that would be by invitation only or for wine club members only.
Okay. Thank you, Val. Thank you, Navi.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Congratulations thank you. For getting this done. This is fantastic.
Yeah. Hey, that was all Navi. Very persuasive.
Thank you.
Very smart, Navi. Very smart.
Okay, thanks, Terry.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Seating is limited, reservations are required, and good times are guaranteed. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13 from 11 to 4, gourmet hot dogs, paired with award-winning wines. You can find them at road13vineyards.com.